News Team correspondent Emma Hutchins speaks with Mayor Esser Mannheimer, who's running for re-election this November.
Well, first, just to get things started, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, your life outside of being the mayor.
My name is Esther Mannheimer, and I'm 46 years old. And my family, when I was in high school, moved to Asheville in 1988. My dad went to work at UNC Asheville, and my mom was a librarian. And I was really bummed out that we're moving here because I thought of myself as a big city person. We lived in D.C. before we moved here. But it turned out to be a wonderful place to move. And I went away to college and moved back with my husband, Mark Harris, who's a teacher at Inca High School, who's from, born and raised in Buncombe County. We moved back in 2002, and so 15 years ago. And now we have three boys that are ages 10, 13, and 15, and they go to Jones Elementary, Asheville Middle, and Asheville High. And we're lucky to have extended family here. Both our sets of parents live here. All the grandparents live here. My sister lives here. His brother lives in Haywood County. So I'm also a lawyer. Right now, you and I are sitting in my law firm. I went to UNC Chapel Hill and got a law degree, as well as a master's in public administration. I thought I'd like to be a city attorney, actually. That was kind of one of my interests. I've always really been interested in all things city. And after law school, when I graduated in 1998, I went to work at the legislature in North Carolina for 4 years as an attorney. And I worked on legislative commissions. I did redistricting while I was there on the House side, and I did studied at that time. The state was studying the deregulation of the electric industry, which was really fascinating. It gave me a lot of background in utilities, which has been handy. And I just staffed various committees. I staffed a local government committee, got to understand a lot about how the state interacts with cities. And then when we moved back here, I went into private practice as a lawyer. I'd never done that before, and stayed at this law firm ever since. And I do, I'm a civil litigator, so I do commercial and real estate litigation primarily. And I represent homeowners associations throughout Western North Carolina as well, which are like little mini cities. They have issues like short-term rentals and very similar to cities in some ways.
I bet.
So that's a little bit about me. And I've been on city council since 2009, ran for mayor in 2013, and been mayor since then.
What are your thoughts on maintaining a balance between development and tourism in Asheville and then meeting the needs and interests of Asheville's citizens to keep the city livable?
Well, we're obviously a booming city right now. North Carolina's booming, and we're booming right along with it. And so this has become a real struggle. Frankly, when I first came on council in 2009, the recession was just underway. Not a lot was happening. There were a lot of plans that had been approved during the boom, and they were quite controversial, but they got shelved and didn't happen. And the issue was unemployment. You know, we had this unemployment rate to deal with, and now we're in this situation where we have had the lowest unemployment rate in the state for months and months and months and months, but our wages aren't high enough. And people are expressing to council that they see too much growth. It's too fast. The pace is too much. They don't like the traffic situation. They don't like the look and feel of the development. And they're feeling like we have too many tourists at this point. So, you know, cities in North Carolina are obviously limited by our state legislature in terms of what we can do. But the primary tool given to cities to deal with growth issues is zoning. So we can't stop development altogether, but we can guide better and more thoughtful development. We can say no if a project does not meet the requirements. So that's a lot of what we work on. A lot of conversation with developers around, you know, what are they going to do to make what they're doing something positive for the city and not something negative. And then on the issue of wages, which feeds into affordable housing, again, you know, cities in North Carolina cannot mandate a minimum wage that employers have to pay, but we can set our own wages. And so this city council has done that. We now pay a living wage for all 1,200 city employees. And I think that's helped create some pressure in the market for other employers to pay better wages. We just have of all the successful cities in North Carolina, thriving cities, which we are one of, we're on the lower end of the wage spectrum. And part of that is because we're not associated with a large university like Duke or Chapel Hill or NC State. The wages tend to be higher in those areas. Charlotte, just being a large city. But we have a lot more work to do on that. And I think we need to see quality job growth here so people have better and more opportunities.
Well, you spoke to this a little bit about, you know, what you see can be done to improve the problem of affordability in Asheville. So I feel like you've definitely addressed the wages part of that. But what other solutions do you see or possibilities do you see to making Asheville a more affordable place to live?
Well, you know, this is interesting. So affordable housing is a major issue, and it's a major focus of the city council. I'll just say that. I personally made many, many, many presentations in neighborhoods around Asheville about the bond issue that was on the ballot a year ago, and $25 million of it is dedicated to affordable housing. And I personally went and talked to people about that and why they should support it, and they did. So that is a priority. We have the best, most thorough affordable housing program in the state. I can tell you that. We make grants all the time from our Affordable Housing Trust Fund to developers that pledge to dedicate part of their project to affordable housing. We've now parlayed the first city-owned piece of land into an affordable housing project that is deed restricted for 50 years to affordable housing. We are now in the due diligence period looking at other pieces of land the city owns, trying to decide where we should go next. We're looking at South Charlotte Street, the Matthews Ford site on Biltmore Avenue, and there's another site down in the River Arts District. So we're trying to look for opportunities where the city can leverage its own land into affordable housing. But, you know, I was hearing a speaker once who was giving a talk. It was the regional president of the Federal Reserve. So, you know, the Federal Reserve overall, we always hear on the news about the big Federal Reserve, but they're broken into regions, and so the head of our division, which is Virginia, North Carolina, maybe South Carolina, Georgia, I'm not sure, he was giving a talk, an economic outlook forecast, and he came up to me afterwards and they introduced me to him and he said, you know, cities that have the least regulation have the most affordable housing. And so this is this thought about if you remove all these regulatory barriers like zoning, that you make building housing the cheapest possible, so it can be the most affordable. But I think that Asheville is this challenging dichotomy of people that are very invested in how their city grows, or don't want it to grow, for that matter. And if it does grow, they do want zoning. They want what things look like to be regulated, how tall they can be. But on the other hand, they want more affordability. And with a market as tight as ours is, with so little housing available, you know, basic Econ 101 mm-hmm. will teach you that drives up the cost of housing. So, ironically, we need more housing, which means more development. So I think the growth of the city is inevitable. It is incumbent on the council to guide the growth of the city.
Returning to the development of city-owned property, how do you see that development providing housing for people within the 30 to 40% AMI?
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess maybe the question, do you see it providing housing?
So that's a really good question, because the cost of new construction, no matter how you cut it, is so expensive that it is one of the most ineffective ways to get affordable housing. And, you know, that is the reason why we also have a federal program called HUD, Housing and Urban Development. And housing, because housing and urban development provides public housing and Section 8 housing that serves the population that you're talking about in those income ranges, because there's almost no other way to do it. It has to be so heavily subsidized. And I think it should be. I support that. But for a city that operates on a $110 million general fund budget, it's almost near impossible to do that. So, you know, I think we need to continue to advocate for better federal programs. We know that 5% of Asheville's population already lives in public housing or is on Section 8 vouchers. And, you know, part of the issue there is there's not enough, so you might be holding a voucher, but you can't find the housing. And I don't know if you had a chance to go hear the author of Evicted speak at UNC Asheville. He had a really interesting proposal, because this is a nationwide crisis right now, the lack of housing and the lack of affordable housing. And he talked about how the cost of housing has grown since the 1990s by 70%, and it's completely outpaced growth in wages. So this is, you know, simple math why we're having this problem. But he proposed that the federal government dramatically expand the number of people that are eligible for Section 8 vouchers, so that nobody pays more than 30% of their income on housing. And he had a proposal for how to fund it, too. So I think that you've hit on a serious issue, which is in terms of the city's ability to provide affordable housing, it is limited because of the cost of new construction.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, what we try to do is we try to subsidize each unit up to $20,000 per unit. And this is grant funding that we work with affordable housing builders to build housing in that range. And, you know, the product they can build for, you know, meeting building code and all the, you know, requirements is not going to hit that that income population. And we're going to have to make sure we have a whole portfolio of options for folks so that we can get everybody housed.
Staying with housing for a minute, what is your plan for regulating short-term rentals in Asheville moving forward? But I'm also curious to hear more about regulating different parts of town differently.
So where we are right now on short-term rentals is that short-term rentals have always been banned since we've had zoning in residential districts. Our zoning code, like many, has a standard provision that says rentals must be 30 days or more, or no less than 30 days. But it wasn't an issue because short-term rentals wasn't really a thing, you know, for a long time. And so short-term, whole house short-term rentals and whole accessory dwelling unit, this could be a basement apartment or an apartment over a garage or something, those are banned in residential districts. So you can do long-term rental of those units, but not short-term. But in non-residential districts, we allow a whole house or whole unit short-term rentals. As a compromise, the city allows what are called homestays in residential districts. And that's where either the long-term tenant or the homeowner is actually on the premises and rents out a room or up to two rooms in the house. So I have been a part of making that decision, and I support it. I voted for it. And we have conducted numerous hearings on this issue, very well attended. This is a hot issue for Asheville. We have more short-term rentals than Charlotte, Durham, Raleigh, and Wilmington combined. So it's an enormous force here in Asheville. The question now is, do we extend the ban into, say, the downtown or to the River Arts District or other areas that are not residentially zoned? And the other question is, conversely, not to restrict but to loosen it up, should we allow the short-term rental of what are called ADUs or accessory dwelling units, basement apartments or mother-in-laws or whatever you want to call them? I have not been supportive of allowing the short-term rental of ADUs, and I have been supportive of expanding the ban on short-term rentals in the River Arts District. The council has not discussed expanding the prohibition to downtown yet. That just hasn't been discussed yet at council. And I don't know that if I will support expanding the band to downtown. But I look forward to that conversation, and I'm sure it'll be robust. I will tell you, I personally have had to study this issue extensively. We've had studies done on a city level. I have tried to look at cities that are like Asheville in terms of popularity and growth in short-term rentals, like Portland, Oregon, or Austin, Texas, or Boulder, Colorado, or places like that, just to try to see how they are handling it too. And it's a big issue in all those cities. And they have done it, they all regulate it in some way. And they have, every concept imaginable. They cap the number, they have different classifications. It can be very complicated. So, you raised the issue of enforcement, and we have had to really ramp up enforcement. We have had to grow the fine from $100 a night to $500 a night. We've had to designate two staff people to solely to doing this enforcement. So it's been an issue. And people feel pretty strongly about it. Neighborhoods, for the most part, are opposed to it because it deteriorates the feel of a neighborhood. But on the other hand, it's incredibly lucrative for people. So it's a way to help people make extra income.
For our listeners, can you talk a little bit more about the thinking behind why to regulate different parts of town differently?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the way a neighborhood feels is very different than a commercial corridor, Hendersonville Road or even Haywood Road or Charlotte Street. These are commercial corridors, Merriman Avenue, where short-term rentals are allowed because the zoning is commercial and it's not residential. And I think that, these are just areas of town that feel very different. What I hear from constituents is that, they want continuity in their neighborhood. They want to know their neighbors. They don't want somebody new showing up next door every other day. They don't want to have to deal with parties. They want to be able to get to know their neighbors and have a community. And that having the presence of short-term rentals takes that away. And downtown, there has been a little bit more, not because we have so many people that buy condos downtown. Some of them do that purely for investment. They're not there year round. They're only there part time. They may or may not know their neighbors. The sense of community isn't always as strong. Although I will say I'm hearing from people more and more that they're concerned about the feeling in the downtown and wanting it to be more of a neighborhood in and of itself.
Well, moving on from housing then, what is your plan for improving transportation and accessibility for people in Asheville?
Well, there are many plans. And luckily we have a great committee structure at the city that allows a lot of people to participate and help inform the creation of these plans. When I came on council in 2009, our transit system was only Monday through Friday. It didn't have weekends, extended nights, Saturdays, or Sundays. I mean, it was
I remember that.
Bare bones. It was pretty minimal. And it still needs a lot of work, but we have added Saturday, Sunday, nights, weekends. We've tried to add increased frequency. Transit is tough because it has to be subsidized, of course, and it should be. And it should be a service that is provided to a community. Absolutely. It's important on so many different levels. It's a smart way to grow a city. It's a smart way to get people around. It's environmentally sustainable. But it's to be utilized by more people. It has to be extremely functional. So we're not there yet. And we need to continue to make improvements. I have this transit life history. Sometimes I talk about that. It helps me make decisions. I hate when politicians make decisions based on their own, only their life experience. But in this case, I hope it's helpful. But I lived in Israel for a year, and Israel is a bus country. Everybody in Israel rides a bus. A lot of people don't own a car, and you just buy a monthly bus pass, and the bus comes, every 10 minutes. So you don't even have to look at a schedule. You just know what buses you need to ride, and you get on them. And I lived in Jerusalem for 6 months and lived all the way across town from the university and rode, it would take me two buses to get there. And It was just so functional. Everybody rode the bus. All the school kids rode. There was not a separate system for the school kids. Elderly rode the bus. All their shopping. Everybody did their grocery shopping. All the military rode the bus. So there were always several guns on the bus. But and so for me to experience that system for a prolonged period of time helped me understand where you really need to have a transportation system in order for people to be able to utilize it. And here it still has a stigma. You know, only poor people ride the bus. I'm saying that sarcastically, but that's what people think. And it's not as it's not utilitarian. It's not something people feel like it's easy for them to use. But there are plans, transit plans, to continue to enhance the system. And what we've tried to do every year is sort of chip away next on the next to-do list, the next recommendation. And this year, we had to spend a lot of money changing over the management of the whole system because it hasn't been managed well. And we have had preliminary discussions about designating a designated revenue stream to support transit. And that's something we'll look at some more this year. You know, again, transit's in there competing in that general fund for all the other things we've got to pay money for. So, you know, every year it's this big push to expand our transit spending. So I think that it's unfair to continue to make it compete against everything else in the general fund. And if we can figure out a designated revenue stream, if that's a better model, I think that's a good idea. And I know, you know, you'll hear Kim Roney, who's running for city council, to talk about fare free. And I absolutely think that that is something we should look at. I know Chapel Hill does it and has been doing it. I'll be interested to see how, if there's any partnerships with the university or other way to help underwrite it. But, you know, for every rider who pays $1 to ride the bus, we're paying $3. So it's not a moneymaker. And the amount of money we make from it is minimal. And we have had fare-free trials, and the ridership does go up. So, I mean, I definitely think that's worth looking at.
So during your time as mayor thus far, the city has experienced several situations under which the Asheville Police Department was under scrutiny for use of force after a police shooting of Jerry Williams, and then again for request to expand the budget for the department. What strategies do you hope to employ to make sure that Asheville is upholding the best police practices possible and also to improve police and community relations?
So when I came on council in 2009, not long after, we started to have problems with the evidence room and realized it was a mess, frankly. And we had a turnover in our chief then. And then under the next chief, Chief Anderson, we had some resolution of those problems, but we had other problems. And now we have Chief Tammy Hooper, and she, I have great confidence in Chief Hooper. And since she's come to be the chief of police in Asheville, I think we're seeing a complete shift nationally in how we think and talk about policing, and frankly, what our expectations are from our police departments. And I have said to Chief Hooper and to our city manager, Gary Jackson, that, you know, Asheville is a progressive community, and it expects to be at the forefront of how to do policing tomorrow, not yesterday. And they have been in agreement with that. They understand that. And Chief Hooper has worked hard to make sure she's working with the community in making changes in the police department. So, you know, at a very basic level, of course, the evidence room got cleaned up under Chief Hooper, so that was good. We've also implemented the use of body cameras for all of our officers. We just did that in the last couple of years, and I support that. I think that's very important. I'm disappointed the state takes away the right of people to look at body cam footage in some circumstances, but for those that are the subjects of the body camera footage, they are allowed to see it. So that's really important. And I'm also especially proud of the chief in working with our group of citizens to help draft, design, and put in place a de-escalation training for officers. You know, I don't think she toots her horn for the department as much as she should, but because we now have had all of our officers trained in de-escalation training. And I've talked to citizens who served on that task force, and they tell me, you know, it's been a good thing. It's night and day in terms of the way our officers are being trained and their experience with them. But we're not done. We obviously have, like many cities, data which shows us that minorities are more subject to being searched, and we need to continue to look at how to address those disparities. We're a council that's made equity a priority, and the council now has asked the managers to allow us to review that data on a regular basis so we can see if changes are being made. Because we don't want to be a community where it's us and them. We need to be one community where people are working together, because that's the point. And I think things are moving in the right direction, but I'm going to continue to keep a watchful eye on that. That's a primary concern of mine.
Are there communities that you feel can be better served by the city of Asheville?
I think that there are, and that is one of the reasons why, again, adopting an equity, not so much an equity policy, but trying to make sure that every decision we make is viewed through an equity lens, is part of the reason why we hired an equity manager. So we're one of the first cities to do this. We're not the first, but we're one of the first. And it sounds sort of, you know, people say, oh my gosh, it sounds like a lot of bureaucracy to me. But the concept is to have sort of an internal auditor who's saying, hey, how are you providing services? And are you doing that in an equitable manner? Are you paving only the roads that are in the more wealthy neighborhoods? Or are you making sure you're putting in crosswalks in the poorer neighborhoods? Are you, you know, where are you running your bus routes? Who's getting your contracts? How much are they being paid? Who are we hiring at the city? And how much are they being paid? And is it fair? So I think that we can always do better. And Asheville has, it has wealthier communities and poorer communities, but we're also more, the wealth and poverty line up more with race in Asheville than in other North Carolina communities. You know, if you were to go to Charlotte or even near your hometown of Winston-Salem, you would see that there is a large black middle class, for example. And that is not the case in Asheville. So we have great disparity, and that makes it even more challenging for us to ensure that we're providing services in an equitable manner.
Thank you. What is your position on the removal of local Confederate monuments and plaques?
So I have previously said that I'm in agreement with the governor that Confederate monuments should be removed. Of course, you probably talked about this on your show already, about the state prohibits that, even for cities and counties. That legislation was passed in 2015. And when it was being considered, there was actually an amendment offered that would have let cities and counties make their own decisions about monuments like this, but that amendment didn't pass. So our own state senator, Terry Van Dyne, plans to introduce legislation in the short session, which starts around May, to allow cities and counties to make our own decisions. You know, my feeling about this is, you know, I'm Jewish, and I've tried to think about, what would it be like for me if I lived in a city where there was some kind of a monument that upheld somebody who was historically a notorious anti-Semite? You know, that would not be okay with me. And I don't know how I would explain that to my kids and explain that, oh, but don't worry, you know, now you're equal and everyone sees you the same. That is a mixed message, in my opinion. And, you know, I spent a lot of time with students and certainly students of color, And I don't know how we can appropriately justify the glorification of racists, historical racists. And I think that you can say, well, we don't want to forget history, but I wouldn't say we're forgetting history to remove them. I would say we're certainly going to teach history, and there's a place for teaching that history. We can have museums and so on and so forth. But placing them in the center of our cities, to me, elevates institutional racism.
What is your vision for the future of the Haywood Street property in downtown Asheville that we are still talking about today?
I hope that we don't resolve it, because I've enjoyed having it debated for years on end, and I'm not sure what I would do if we didn't get to continue debating it for years. I have something to be missing in my life. You know, I think that, of course, it's grown to be symbolic about the growth of the city, the direction of the city, the values of the city. And, you know, I think what it's come to symbolize is a stagnation and inability to make decisions about tough topics. But I have appreciated that we had a task force of residents here that came together and put together a series of recommendations. And, you know, they put a lot of time and effort into that. They represented all the spectrum of opinion about the Haywood Street property. And so, you know, I support their opinion. And they came up with a concept that is, I think you would say it's like a mixed use of the property. Some green space, open space, park space, however they decide to finish it off, mixed with something else. You know, I had hopes that we could do something really creative with the site. You know, maybe a plaza that highlighted the church across the street, and we could there was some discussion about moving some of the streets slightly, and, you know, maybe using it for something that served the community or housing or something like that. But, you know, it's just mired down in a lot of political mire. And so I think that what we need to do is just keep moving forward with the task force recommendation. And so what that means in the short term is that it has some short-term uses right now, and I think that'll be fine. No matter what happens with it, it will be significantly expensive. So we need to think about how to finance that. So that's my worry. You know, just that's a challenge that I got to worry about.
Yeah, the next thing to think about. Mm-hmm. Well, my last question, and this is maybe more of an opportunity to educate our listeners, but on the ballot, there will, in addition to voting for candidates, there will be a voter referendum asking Asheville residents if they support dividing the city into electoral districts. How do you think that this will impact future elections?
Well, so to inform, I get a lot of questions about this, so to inform your listeners, there's legislation right now that requires that the city council draw 6 single-member districts for city council. So right now we have 6 city council members. This would mean that we have to draw 6 single-member districts where only the people from that district can elect their representative. In some cities where they have districts, it's at large. The whole city elects that representative, but the representative has to live in that district. This would be different. This would just allow the people from that district to elect their representative. And we are supposed to, according to this law that was passed by the legislature, draw these districts by November 15 and submit them to the legislature. And the bill says that if we don't, next session, come May, the legislature will do it for us. And the districts will be in effect in 2019. So everybody who's running right now would only get a 2-year term before they have to run again, instead of a typical 4-year term. So we, as a city council, said, you know what, there is a state law already that applies to every city in this state that allows us to vote on whether or not we want districts. So that is why on the ballot, there is the question of whether or not people want 6 single member districts. The city council, when it uses the statute, it can only ask for one concept. It can only say, do you want this structure or not? It can't say, here's a menu of options. Would you like three districts or would you like four or, you know, whatever? So we decided we would ask the voters if they wanted what is laid out in this law that is being imposed on Asheville. So if the voters say yes, we will probably not be able to meet the November 15 deadline, but I would anticipate the council would take steps to draw the districts or to put an independent commission in place to draw the districts. And if the voters say no, the council will need to decide what to do. But if the council decides not to draw districts, then the legislature will draw them for us, they say. However, they could not follow their own law. I mean, you know, if 90% of the voters said no, maybe they would consider listening to us for once. Although they haven't before, about 86% of the voters said we shouldn't get rid of our water system, and they did it to us anyway. Luckily, we won that lawsuit, but have retained our water system. So, anyway, it's a complicated issue, but I think for voters, what they need to decide is, do they like the idea of districts, and do they want six single-member districts that the legislature is requiring us to have? And so that we need to know from the voters, is that what you want? And yes or no. And that question, so on the ballot will be the mayor race, city council, and that question. And that's it.
I mean, my question was, how will it impact future elections? But I feel like what the picture that you just painted is, who knows what will even happen between now and
right.
then.
Right. So there's definitely some question about it. I think that if it were to happen, because of the geography of the city is almost shaped like a cross. Because of the rules that govern how you can draw districts, they have to be contiguous, they have to be equal in size. You know, they're supposed to be sort of geographically compact, although the legislature, you know, obviously doesn't follow its own rules. But I think what would happen is, you would end up with a South Asheville district, you would end up with a West Asheville district, an East Asheville district, something that's more of a central district, and you might end up with two North Asheville districts because so much of the population is in North Asheville, or some combination thereof. And what that would mean is, you know, I would imagine that East Asheville might elect somebody a little different than West Asheville, maybe. Just looking at how they vote on other issues, you might get a slightly more conservative council. I think that would be my guess, that you would. And I'm certain that that's the point of the legislation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Thank you so much for your time. In closing, do you have anything else that you'd like our listeners to know?
No, other than I would encourage them to vote.
Yes.
And I'm asking for their vote. And I hope that if they're patient enough to listen to me yammer on during your show, that they're likely to go vote. So that's great.
Excellent. And where can people learn more about you?
There is a website, Manheimer for Mayor, that they can look at.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.